And revenue is open. Good morning, everyone. We're going to go a little bit out of order here today and start with a public hearing on Senate Bill 745. Senator Roblin and Representative Gomberg are here for a brief intro. And they're all here. The whole Coastal Caucus is here. So come on up.
We're not Jackson Sandler.
I'll stand between the Republican and Democrat.
Well, while you get settled, Mazen will give us a quick briefing.
How are you, madam?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
This must be about beaches, now that I thought about it. I saw the Bermuda shorts.
and now... The 745, the beach bill, this is in connection to your taxes on transient lodging. Transient lodging tax applies to several types of accommodations. One of those accommodations is the payments that happen on your recreational parking and other uses overnight of the state parks. This bill basically assumes that if we take those pieces or these amounts of revenue coming from that segment on counties that are on the coast and apply these amounts to a fund, which is a beach cleaning fund, that would be able to fund this program. And it seems from a very broad brush stroke, about 300,000 that we're talking about at this time.
Okay, thank you, gentlemen. Go ahead.
Defer to the senator in the group.
Thank you, Chair Haas and the rest of the committee. We're here to talk about an idea that came from a number of constituents up and down the coast of our district that said we need to figure out a way to solve some problems that exist along the coast, and that State Parks has always been a partner in trying to do that, but the whole coast is not a park, though some people believe that it is, especially the beaches, and it is Oregon's, and the parks do have control over that. But we need to figure out how do we fund some special things. In your the testimony it's been delivered to you, there are some pictures, if you want to look at them, that show the kinds of things that have happened from time to time along the Oregon coast. We had a lot of debris come across the ocean after the tsunami and earthquake, and we've seen those pictures. We've also, thank you, and we've also had other kinds of things wash up on our coast from time to time. And just so you know, I am Senator Roblin, District 5. If I had not done that before, my good representative here helped remind me that I hadn't done that. And when those things happen, we instantly go to different groups like Surfrider and others and say, we need volunteers. We've got to figure out stuff. And some of these places are not easy to get to. They're down cliffs and ravines, and you see people picking up stuff from up and down the coast. We know that the coast is a big draw for visitors to come to the Oregon coast, and we know that they like the experience better when there isn't a lot of debris and stuff on the coast. We've got Solve that's working very hard to help with that. We've got other programs that are working hard to do that. What this bill was that came from that group of constituents on the coast was the idea of how can we have an ongoing fund to take care of some of these emergencies and to actually offer a place for Oregonians and people from around the country that want to support it to send money to that fund, so it wouldn't be just this funding. And so as we looked at the idea, we also decided that we also had to have a revenue source. It's hard to do things without... that cost money without having a revenue source. They looked at a lot of different options. The option they came up with was the transient lodging tax, specifically on the yurts and other facilities that are up and down the coast in our state parks. They pay a transient lodging tax. What we're doing is taking a portion of that to put into this fund, about $150,000 a year or $300,000 a biennium, to supplement other monies that would come in so that we can have an opportunity to take care of these things when they happen. I thought and continue to think a great idea, an opportunity for us to engage our communities even more up and down the coast to solve a problem that we continue to have on the coast, and that's making sure the beaches are as in pristine shape as they can possibly be. So with that, I'll let our other members say a word or two, but thank you for the opportunity to speak here today.
Mr. Chair, Chair Haas and committee, David Brock-Smith, State Representative, House District 1, Coastal District, of course, from Charleston to the California border. And there's a lot of visitors that come and visit those sections of beaches. And I won't add too much because you have a number of people to testify, and the senator outlined it pretty well. I would just reference Section 1, Subsection 4. There's lots of things in this section that these dollars will be used for. Armoring the beachfront front and sand management is always a high priority on the list of all of us on the Coastal Caucus. We have homes and businesses that are threatened up and down the coast, as well as visitor safety and emergency response. Just a few short months ago, we lost a father and a young child off the coast on the beach in my district, and it was a tragedy they were out of Eugene. This happens all too often. This fund, again, is just the diversion of dollars coming from the state parks, 1%. That is currently going to Travel Oregon that would be diverted into this fund so that we can take care of the very visitors that are coming and utilizing those state parks and these Oregon beaches. It's supported by the business community. It's supported by the Coastal Caucus. And it's supported by the folks that utilize these services and resources. So thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, David Gomberg from House District 10, which reaches from Tillamook to Yahats on the Central Coast. Appreciate the chance to be here with my colleagues today, and I'll try not to be unnecessarily repetitive, but we are, of course, this year celebrating the 50th anniversary of the Oregon Beach Bill. Beach is a remarkable resource, not only to coastal residents, but to all Oregonians and to the people that come here and visit us every year. And things are better at the beach, but they could be even a little bit better than they are right now if we can address some core problems. And the core problems, as you've heard from my colleagues, include trash and they include safety. The safety of visitors who come out and find themselves in sneaker waves, find themselves on the rocks with the tide coming in, find themselves on logs that aren't as stable as they appear, and we lose visitors every year, two in the last month, if I'm not mistaken. And to be just a little bit more clear, we're not talking about our constituents. We're talking about your constituents who come to the beach not as prepared, not as well-informed as they might be when they come out to have a good time and find themselves unintentionally in harm's way. That's part of what this bill is about. If we want to support state parks and their efforts to educate the public, to promote safety, and yes, also to pick up some of the trash, where do we get the money from to do it? Well, one of the answers to that is to use some of the funds that are currently being collected by state parks when people overnight in campsites or in yurts or in RV spaces in the parks that are along the beach. We're essentially talking about taking tax revenues collected at the beach and spending them again at the beach. To put that in context, I believe Travel Oregon has a current budget of about $14 million, and we're talking about $150,000 a year that can be used to support state parks with the beach fund. It's a unique idea. I do not believe that it's any kind of slippery slope that would open the door to all kinds of diversions from transient room tax dollars being used for a variety of purposes. This is a focused concept that would make a real difference to the enjoyability of the beach and the safety of the beach. I think Travel Oregon does a remarkable job in promoting Oregon, in particular promoting visits to the Oregon beach. But as a small business person, I recognize that good marketing can get you to buy once. But if you don't have a positive experience, you're not going to come back and buy again. We want people to have a positive experience at the beach, a safe experience at the beach, and we want them to keep coming back over and over again. The Beach Fund is one of the tools that that we propose to help make that future possible.
Thank you, gentlemen. Questions of our state legislators? Senator Bart Sugar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one kind of a two-part question is, who is going to be making these decisions and how will they prioritize the projects?
Well, the State Parks is going to be making the decisions. I know that Charlie will be able to answer this question a little better. But the priorities of the projects probably will come from the State Parks coastal manager in collaboration with his rangers and the Coastal Caucus with input.
Other questions? Senator Bolkus.
Thank you. Colleague, first, I'm in full agreement on the tax portion. I got that one. So don't take this wrong. Local taxes for Transcend ought to be spent locally. Now, the second half, though, is this follow-up to Senator Bershugger's question, because we're thinking along the same line. My constituents and your constituents, when we voted for this thing the first time, all were under the impression, and it was sold to us as the bill of goods, which is a derogatory comment, so you can know where we're going here, that we were going to get our parks up to standard, we were going to maintain our parks, and we're going to be able to operate our parks. And instead, what we got after that ballot measure was a plan to go do broad acquisitions and do preventative and catch-up maintenance over multiple decades, which, as you've just pointed out, we haven't caught up yet. But we're still out spending broadly spending money. My concern is that once we do the, as I agree with your concept, once we say this money needs to be utilized for these things that are on there, the question then comes back down, how do we make sure that it's actually used for that? Because we raise all kinds of money for parks now through the lottery. We all thought we were going to do the backlog of maintenance. I mean, the poster child was actually down in just north of your district, in Senator Johnson's district now, and the poster child still isn't fixed, 20-some years later. And so the challenge comes back down is how do we make sure that they spend this money on the pictures, which, of course, bring them back and do all those sorts of things. And so I'm a little concerned, that the money that you need, which I agree, there's not enough bumper boards on this thing. Because I will just point out to you, but not limited to, which is, what's the three famous word, notwithstanding, right? That the money won't get to the projects you need it to go to do public safety, to get it back. So obviously we're not going to change the ballot measure and how Parks is doing these acquisitions, but there's the problem I have with the concept.
Chair Haas, Senator Boquist, I'll start with the second part. And I see that the Coastal Caucus is playing a key role in making sure that projects will be fulfilled, especially in relation to the visitor safety and emergency response, but also in the beachfront armoring and sand management. We're involved with a look at Goal 18 and how we can protect not only our coastal infrastructure with regards to residents and businesses, but also Highway 101 and necessary infrastructure such as sewers and water lines and so forth. To your second point, I'll go on record as saying that I fully agree with you that the lottery dollars that are going to the state parks and that measure was flawed because so much is going to purchase new parks, but there isn't the dollars to upkeep to keep up with the infrastructure maintenance of the existing parks that we have. And so that needs to be fundamentally fixed, because it doesn't do us any good to add parks to the system that can't be enjoyed by the residents that voted to do that. This, I can tell you, will be under a microscope, so to speak, and these dollars, the state park system shifted their regional managers not too long ago. Now we have a full coastal regional manager who's doing a fantastic job, and he has a list of maintenance items. I understand your concern with limited two. I often have the same concerns, but with the Coastal Caucus oversight, I think these dollars will be well spent and managed appropriately.
You're going to hear from some constituents here, and this bill originated from a groundswell of local people coming to us. They, I believe, will hold the feet to the fire to parks. They have worked with them in conjunction with them when there have been emergencies come. They come to the area to take care of it because it's important to them. I expect in this bill, if people started getting off course, you would have that same groundswell of local people who knew why this bill was here, and you can ask them why they got engaged in this, and they would be a part of the core of people who would keep parks to their mission with respect to this bill. I also agree that we need to take care of the parks we have, and I wish there was ways in which money could be adjusted from that ballot measure that I agree is also flawed. We have a lot of parks. I love the parks we have, but if we don't take care of them, it makes it kind of a sham when people want to come and participate in these parks that we have, and then the facilities aren't where they should be. So you won't get a lot of argument from, I think, anybody in the Coastal Caucus on that part.
Thank you, Chair Hatz. I think I just want to understand. I'm looking at the summary here, and because the sum of money is, you know, the $300,000 for the biennium, is this to pay for one or two FTE, and then they're going to make certain that other dollars are used? Because obviously, this is not enough money to actually provide the direct. To address the direct need of cleaning up the debris. Is this to have FTE so that someone can coordinate those efforts, or to make certain that money from things that are supposed to be going towards these efforts actually get there? I'm trying to just wanted a clarification, please.
I don't necessarily see this as an FTE issue, though that may be a part of what the conversation will take place. I think that this is that seed money that the state's putting in that will draw other money from all over the state to help with this. This fund is basically designed to take money from anybody who wants to send it so that we can use that money to do some of these specific things. I expect it will be more of an emergency fund when all of a sudden something pops up, like the pictures you've seen, and there will have the resources that can be taken to that area and the people. Again, there will still be a lot of volunteers working on this stuff. Okay. But the issue is we need to take care of things as they pop up. As you see the kinds of things that we need to do, we need to address them. And we recognize this isn't enough money to do all that. But capitalizing on the 50th anniversary and capitalizing on the opportunity for other people to give money, in general, in almost everything we do, if we want to get federal money, if we want to get other money, you've got to have the state puts something in first to show that it's important, and then you go out and find those other resources necessary to do some of the other work.
I just want to point out, colleagues, that the Coastal Caucus, because I know all you guys are opposed to some other agencies that aren't listening, okay? So I just want to point out to you the good relationship you have with Parks today, I do not doubt. I'm just pointing out to you that at times relationships change. And
that's true.
If I were the one writing this, I would have a slightly more teeth into it to ensure that the Coastal Caucus, or at least somebody, had slightly more teeth in the legislature. And I would be opposed if we're just going out and hiring a new FTE, because, as you point out, good senator and colleague, I mean, the goal here is to get matching money and to use it, and you don't know. I mean, there's this safety project. You don't know when a ship's going to crash onto the ocean, and you got to do it, so on and so forth. And this is the funnier part. I'm not opposed to your bill. I'm just pointing out that there are some weaknesses that your constituents, if the money was misappropriated or misused or used in a manner that your constituents did not think appropriate, your avenue of change, other than browbeating, even in the majority, doesn't go much beyond browbeating.
The only answer I would have to that is that we have had a relationship that continues to grow with parks on the coast. This last year, we had actually over the last 5 or 6 years, we had a number of people who visited our coast die at Pacific City and the cliffs there. This last season, Parks readjusted, had a ranger there with expertise on how to save and rescue people. We'd had conversations with everybody walking up the cliff to not get out past the deal. They have, and again, I agree with you, things change, but they have been responsive to issues up and down the coast, and we appreciate that. And I think that that working relationship, we need to foster it and continue to go and work with it. So I understand what you're saying, however.
Good luck.
All right. Well, thank you for
thank you
forward. I would like to close this public hearing, at least for now.
Senator Johnson.
Yes, got it. And I would like to open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 936 on the SIP program. That's your bill.
Thank you.
And so we will take a briefing from Kyle first, and then in keeping with the Coastal Caucus theme of the day, we will invite Senator Johnson forward.
Mr. Chair, we are on Troika.
Perfect. Come on up, and we'll receive our briefing.
Yeah. Okay. Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
Soviet
Senate Bill 936 is making changes to the Strategic Investment Program, which is a 15-year partial property tax exemption. I'll try to very briefly describe the exemption as it is under current law and what the changes in the bill will do. But the general quick brief overview is the Strategic Investment Program, or the SIP program, is, as I said, is a partial property tax exemption for 15 years. And it's for large capital projects that are in a traded sector. And there's two, really, there's a minimum threshold in investment in the property that needs to go on, that needs to be invested. And then the amount above that amount is subject to taxation. And this minimum amount is dependent upon whether it's in a rural or an urban area. So in urban areas, it's $100 million. That's the minimum investment. That's the amount that is taxable, and the amount above that $100 million is what is subject to the exemption. In rural areas, the amount is $25 million, with the amount above that receiving the exemption. There are community service fees that are required. Those are equal to 25% of the foregone tax revenue of the property that's exempt, although there are caps of $2 million and $500,000 for those community service fees. So what the measure does is it's changing the minimum investment thresholds in rural areas for the project. And this is in the staff measure summary. You can see the little table I have there. And it's based upon the total cost of the project. So as the total cost of the project goes up, the taxable or the minimum investment amount, the taxable amount, goes up as well. So for example, the total cost of a project that's above $1 billion would then be the minimum threshold be $100 million. So that's what would become taxable. Where today, that's $25 million. The second change in the bill, in addition to those minimum thresholds, is the change in the community services fees. So that would eliminate the distinction between the urban and the rural fees, the $2 million and the $500,000, and would just move that cap up to $2.5 million. It should be noted that that change in the community service fee only applies to the case-by-case projects. There's a separate statute for those community service fees for the projects that are in the strategic investment zone. So just a little distinction there. And that's, I guess, my brief overview.
Okay. Senator Johnson is here to describe how she got to this bill and the problem we're trying to solve.
Thank you very much. AOC and now former longtime Columbia County Commissioner Tony Hyde asked me to propose Senate Bill 936 on their behalf. I've worked with Commissioner Hyde in my district over the years regarding many business location decisions, including the use of Oregon's business incentives as part of a location package. These were good for county taxpayers and good for business. With my other hat as an ex officio member of the Oregon Business Oregon Commission, I participated in discussions about rural SIP projects, all of those investments ranging from between $100 million to near $1 billion to date. As the professional staff described when the rural component of the SIP was established by the legislature in 2005, there was never an expectation that rural investments in manufacturing and capital outlay of this magnitude could be achieved. That's why the rural SIP provisions for property taxes and community service fees to be paid annually were capped at that time at one quarter the amounts of what we've established for urban investments. AOC and Commissioner Hyde believe that now's the time to reset the rural provisions in the program on a limited sliding scale based on the value of the investments as provided in this bill. So Doris Penwell from AOC and Tony Hyde are going to provide the details for the bill, but that's the reason that it is before you today. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Go ahead, guys.
Let me go ahead.
Right.
Okay. Chair Hess, members of the committee, I'm Doris Penwell from Association of Counties. I'm here, of course, in support of Senate Bill 936, the A and Gross version. It's been well described. There are really two sections of the bill that are changed for both rural and then one section for urban. And as I said, those have been described. And currently, the levels that are capped are really low compared to the kind of investment that we've gotten in rural Oregon. And, of course, that's a surprise to all of us. We'd still like some of those lower investments, but they're just not happening yet where the strategic investment program is used. So this bill changes the thresholds depending on the amount of investment, and it's very limited. I mean, clearly can invest up to $500 million and still be capped at $25 million for the value of the investment made in taxes. But a number of the projects we've had, and they can be delineated, are way bigger than anything we even proposed or thought could happen. So over time, the counties and the county commissioners have thought, you know, this doesn't seem like it's what we intended when this was first developed in 2005. So that's why we're here today. And Tony Hyde can give you some examples of why this has occurred over time and the conversations he's had with counties. But the other important factor in this bill is the change in the community service fee cap up to $2.5 million rather than the $500,000 that's in the statute now for just rural projects. The 2.5 applies to all projects, urban and rural. And so far, we seem to find support for this change, and we certainly hope that you can support us, too, as we move forward. There is one possible change we may need to make in the bill, and I should just be upfront about that. There are some projects going on amongst several counties, some larger, some not so large, that are actually being negotiated right now. So after talking to both businesses and the counties, they are concerned that if we don't make the effective date of this bill to about October, 91 days after the session, this may go into effect in the middle of the negotiations, and that's not really very helpful. So that's the one amendment we may need to ask for, if that is something you can support. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chair Hass, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Tony Hyde. Long time, as Senator said, I spent the last 27 years as elected official. I also sat on the Business Oregon Commission when the rural SIP was first envisioned, and the idea was, you know, the rural counties, and not the least which was Columbia County and my county, we were saying, well, what about us when it comes to an SIP? And so there was quite a bit of work on the part of the commission to develop a rural SIP. Unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on how you look at it, we made the assumption because it was rural, it was going to be small. And the projects that would come to the rural areas would be small. And the very first project that came across my desk in Columbia County was $285 million, which is not small. And quite frankly, having a taxing limit of $25 million on a $285 million investment, and then having further the community service fee, which is supposed to be 25% of that foregone tax, back to the county, and more importantly, all of the other taxing districts in the county, was woefully small. And I think that's clearly evidenced by Prineville as a classic example of the fact that just because you're a rural county doesn't mean you're going to have small investments. So this is something that's been cooking for several sessions, and I think it's time that we looked at this and made a fix. Quite frankly, we're just leaving too much money on the table.
Okay, question of the panel or of staff, just to make sure that a concern that urban and rural wouldn't get mixed, that's addressed in the legislation, Kyle, that these rates wouldn't apply to urban projects and get under that.
Yes, Mr. Chair, that's in the engrossed version. There is, it talks about the minimum cost of the project, and it specifies under ORS 285C-606-1CA. And that's what points back to the urban-rural distinction. So it does make the change just in the rural area. Okay. Leaves the minimum amount in the urban area unchanged.
Thank you. Questions, Senator Riley?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I was sitting on the Economic Development Committee in 2005 when we looked at this, and I can tell you that it's exactly as is stated. We said, wow, this is plenty. It turned out not to be. Fortunately, turned out not to be, and I think we do need to update and take care of the way it is now, as opposed to what we thought it was going to be. So, I'm in favor of this as it's needed. I think.
Further questions. All right, Doris Penwell, Commissioner Hyde, and Senator Johnson. Thank you.
Thank you.
I don't see anyone else signed up to testify on this measure, so I'm going to close the public hearing on 936 and open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 333.
Sometimes Rowan is the only room open during the day. Early morning, so he sits here.
Right. It's between us.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 333 makes some changes to the Oregon Industrial Site Readiness Program. And just for some background, the program is an economic incentive for local governments to build infrastructure for traded sector industries, and it provides them with half of the income tax revenue attributable to the businesses that locate on site. And it goes back to the government sponsors to help cover those costs. There's two tracks that a sponsor can take. One is to actually pay for the infrastructure cost up front, and then they can be reimbursed up to the full cost of providing that from 50% of the income tax revenues. Or if they want up for a loan, they can take that loan and receive back up to half of the cost of the infrastructure. All from half of the income tax revenue. The measure makes some different changes. Instead of certifying the amount of income tax revenue from the employer, the employment department would be involved instead in certifying that amount, and DAS also looks at it. There are some minimum employment requirements to sites that are developed under the program, and those are new. The requirement that they make greater than 150% of the area income is still in play, but the minimum employment requirements are new. So that would be greater than 25 employees in rural areas and greater than 50 employees in urban areas. It removes the requirement that the sponsor have a contract with the industry locating on site, and also just provides the distribution of personal income tax revenue. Previously, there had been a five-year waiting period before which the amounts would begin to be redistributed. This measure also changes that to 1 year from 5 years, so it actually makes the local governments able to get the money sooner. And if there's a revenue impact statement for this measure, it would look like overall, technically, it's not a revenue impact, but it's a redistribution from the state general fund to the local government sponsor. And each column, I would say, would be an indeterminate amount. It would depend on how much this program is taken advantage of by the counties and or cities or local government entities.
Thank you. Randy Tucker, Rocky Dalem, and Catherine Williams. It's good to see Randy Tucker back in the Oregon State Capitol.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's good to be back. I'm Randy Tucker. I'm Legislative Affairs Manager for Metro. And Christine did a great job of explaining the bill, so I'm going to be very brief. I think we're going to all try to be very brief. Just a little bit of background. This is an update and a sort of a fix, a couple of little fixes to legislation that was passed in 2013. And the original problem is that a lot of local governments have land available for industrial development, but that land needs infrastructure or other investments in order to make it ready for development. It's there, but it's not actually ready for the market, and companies are not willing to locate on a property that doesn't have whether it's transportation access or it has a brownfield problem or a wetland issue or the site has not been aggregated into a single ownership and that sort of thing. So this was intended to address that problem. There are a couple of ways that the bill turned out to be less than workable, and we're trying to address those here today with Senate Bill 333. I'll just summarize a couple of the specific changes that you've already heard a little bit about and a little bit of background. The main thing to understand is that this program provides a benefit. It provides, it's a relationship between a local project sponsor, which is a local government, a public sector entity, and the state of Oregon. A business locating on one of these sites that has been made ready through this program doesn't get any kind of a benefit. And the original legislation imposed requirements on those businesses for reporting, and it required that there be an agreement between the local project sponsor and that business. So what the legislation does is it recognizes that that's not the relationship that is relevant here. The relationship that's relevant is between the state and the local project sponsor, the city or the county that's sponsoring it. And so in the definitions, there are a couple of changes so that an eligible employer is no longer defined as having an agreement with the local government. And then the reporting requirements that used to apply to the business that's located on this industrial site now will be addressed through Business Oregon working with other state agencies. So it's pretty straightforward in kind of eliminating some of the disincentives for a company to participate or to be located on one of these sites. As Christine mentioned, we've also added some job creation thresholds, a lower one for rural areas and a higher one for urban areas. Those are on page 2 of the bill in the definitions. And finally, in looking back at the bill, I spent a lot of time looking at this thing over the last year and a half and could not figure out why there was a 5-year delay before the sharing of taxes began. And so we've eliminated that and gone back to the 1-year delay that Christine mentioned. So I'll stop there. And I think that we're happy to answer questions, obviously, about the bill itself, and let my colleagues weigh in.
Chair House, members of the committee, Rocky Dalam. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Economic Development Association, which is a statewide nonprofit organization working to support economic development professionals who are on Oregon's front line of diversifying our economy, particularly our traded sector economy, manufacturing jobs. OEDA's membership includes both public and private entities, private economic development corporations, utilities, and cities and counties as well. OEDA's worked on this issue, as some of you may know, for as far back as we started this industrial site readiness and regionally significant industrial site projects that we've worked on with these groups. We've always supported, in this session, support getting more shovel-ready projects, which this Senate Bill 333 and the underlying program do. As Randy mentioned, the brownfields work has always been important to OEDA. This is a method for remediating some of those brownfields where you can get industrial sites up to shovel-ready status. So in that vein, we have members both rural and urban across the state. Some of them have weighed in on OLIS who are supportive of the program. And really, this is technical changes, as Randy walked through. We're really glad to have Randy back, not just because he's here, but because he's also been sort of the pointy head on this over the last 4 years.
Nerd.
So we'll defer any questions to Randy, but I wanted to weigh in that there's broad support on this, and the coalition's been pretty broad over the past several sessions. So thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Hi, Catherine Williams, Port of Portland. We're a member of the Industrial Lands Coalition and also of OEDA, and I'm just going to say ditto to what folks to my left just said and flag that we are working on an amendment with the Employment Department, just to, and Randy touched on it briefly, just to sort of make the language in the current bill more consistent. That right now, the Employment Department's Workforce Economic Research Division currently shares employment service and labor market info with the Oregon Business Development Department. So we want to make sure that the way the bill is written reflects how things actually happen and put some language into employment statute to reflect that. So there will be an amendment coming. There are folks in the room from Employment Department today, but without the amendment, it's probably hard to ask questions, but we'll continue working together and hope to have that soon. Thanks.
Thank you. Questions of the panel, Senator Bobulus.
I just have a technical or philosophical question. I'm carrying another bill today, which I declare a conflict of interest. I don't have a conflict on this one, but and it's the job threshold of 150% of county or state average wage. I think the bill I have is 150% of county wage on industrial sites. I mean, any idea of, I mean, several of you have been here longer than some of us. Any, and some of you have not, by the way. But any idea why on the industrial property we pick county, the lower of county or state versus on some of the other enterprise zones we just put county wage?
Mr. Chair, Senator Boquist, I actually don't remember from 2013 how, you know, where that language came from. I can tell you, just over the last few days, the state average wage is somewhere in the range of $49,000-$50,000. Mm-hmm. In some counties, it's much lower, obviously, mm-hmm. In some counties, much higher. We would be open to a conversation about whether that whichever is lower is necessary. It's just language that I believe is carried forward from the original bill, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah,
sure. Senator Boquist.
I'm not going either direction. I'm just anticipating the question on the floor today. Because there's no votes in the bill I'm going to carry, so I want to be able to answer the question.
Well, there's one way that it could play out. I mean, you know, the bill, as you'll, if you dig into the guts of it, you'll note that it is limited. This program is limited to, it's capped at a maximum of $10 million of state resources per year. And in the work that was done prior to bringing this forward in 2013, we identified just in the Portland region a much, much greater need for investments than what this bill would ever come close to providing, at least with the current limits. Mm-hmm. And so to the extent that you feel it's important to target those dollars to higher yield industrial properties in the urban areas, you could eliminate that whichever is less, and then you'd be looking at 150% of the county average wage in a higher income county. But that would be, we would leave that to your judgment as policymakers.
Randy, you spent way too much time on this subject. Pick up knitting or something.
Right. And you're not helping my carry later today either.
I'm sorry.
Thanks. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Sorry, Senator Riley.
So the 5-year to 1-year, is that cause an increased fiscal?
Well, Chair Haas and Senator Riley, yes, I think it would. It increases the amount of money that would be transferred from the state to the local governments and makes it transferred sooner. So yes, it's a greater amount that is still indeterminate, but greater.
Part of the reason I think it might have been 5 years instead of starting in 1 year is we want businesses that are going to be there for a while, and this is a way to ensure that we're giving this money away with companies who are going to be there for a while. That's one way to look at this, I believe. And what's your comment on that?
Senator Riley, Chair Haas, the Economic Development Association is always focused, as this bill does, on traded sector jobs. And the one of the benefits of this bill and these types of programs is the industrial sites, which we always consider to be much more sticky for our economy. Mm-hmm. And the interesting point from an Oregon standpoint is when you get these companies into these types of facilities with the type of work they're doing, it's much more difficult because it's capital intensive to go. So getting them here sooner is the way that you keep them here longer. So I think because it's focused on traded sector and industrial sites, the ability for them to change locations in a short period of time is probably considerably less than other types of businesses.
Thank you. Good point, Senator. All right. Thank you. I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 333. And I know there are some people here from the coast, and I want to, in the time we have remaining, have them come up and have their day in court on Senate Bill 745. So I'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 745. Yeah. It's a figure of speech.
You're starting to scare me.
So I have Carmen Matthews, Charlie Plybun, and Bob Bailey.
Chairman Haas and members of the Senate Finance and Review Committee, I'd like to thank you for your time. My name is Carmen Matthews. I'm from Coos County. I'm a local business owner. I own a brewery and pub, and I'm here to hopefully gain your support on this particular beach fund bill. I'm also a member of the Surfrider Foundation, so I just want to first say that I've done a lot of beach cleanups and a lot of disaster type responses where something major happens on our beaches that affects our entire community, and it has been something that has been inspiring because our community does step up to do these things. However, we definitely need some help. On the business end of things, I have received a lot of benefit from the lodging tax revenue. I'm part of, you know, Travel Oregon and Orla and all these different things, and they do a lot for us down in the coast and for my brewery. So that particular program really works well. But the way I see the funds that we are talking about today for this specific fund, a very small portion of what is actually being generated by the lodging taxes across the state, I see the potential return on investment from those particular sources of revenue having much larger impact in terms of keeping Oregon and its natural treasure safe and maintained to a point where people aren't turned away from what we have. I consider the ocean and our beaches our greatest state's treasure. And at the moment, we are relying too heavily on volunteerism to make sure that the beaches are safe and somewhat clean. I do not believe that volunteerism will go down if we have more support financially. I believe that if we have some tools to help mediate any major catastrophes that happen on the beach, it will probably just help us to facilitate more volunteers to make sure that things are maintained and safe. And I've tried to equate it in my own personal business a little bit. I spend a lot of money on advertising and trying to get people to my pub, but if I was to rely on the patrons to volunteer their time to maintain my pub or to make it safe or do preventative maintenance, that would be strange and it would not work. But I feel like that's what we're doing right now. And I really hope that this can be the start of something that maintains our national, our state's treasure to a certain level of safety that is acceptable for most people. As you know, this amount of money that we're talking about is not a huge amount of money. It's not going to change the world. It's not going to change the beaches. But it will help us to maintain any major disaster from getting out of hand. I think you saw earlier there was a major dock explosion, basically. A dock washed up on shore just below my parents' house, and it just blew apart. It was just tons of styrofoam, and it looked like it had snowed on the beach, the entire beach. And it took hundreds of volunteers, hundreds of hours, many, many days. And it was amazing to see that amount of work pulled together from just volunteers. But it could have been remedied much quicker had somebody been able to utilize a little bit of funding to pull the dock off before it basically exploded. And when I mean exploded, I mean the waves came, it crashed, broke it apart, and then it started spilling styrofoam. So I really hope that we can get a little bit of help in terms of funding. And in terms of your question about who will be making the choices on where these funds will be appropriated, I really think that the local population along the coast knows exactly what needs to be taken care of on a day-to-day basis. And we work really well with the state parks, at least with the Surf Rider Foundation and just local people. They hold the state parks to a high standard in terms of listening to what the general public has to say, who's going and enjoying the beaches on a constant basis. So anyways, I'd just like to thank you for your time and hopefully made some kind of point today.
You did. Thanks.
Chair Haas, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Charlie Plyvin. I'm the Oregon Policy Manager for Surf Rider Foundation. Surf Rider is a nonprofit environmental organization dedicated to the protection and enjoyment of our oceans, waves, and beaches. And it's a very broad mission, but one that really resonates for us here in Oregon. Protection and enjoyment of our beaches is at the forefront of what our volunteers and our chapters do. We have chapters and organizing committees in Curry County and Coos County. We have our Siosla chapter in Lane County. We have in Lincoln County our Newport chapter. In Clatsop County, we have an organizing committee, and we have a chapter in Portland as well. These are all volunteers that dedicate a lot of time and a lot of effort into protecting and partnering with parks and our beaches. We're not asking for money for ourselves. We enjoy the benefits of being a nonprofit organization and being able to raise some money locally to support our efforts, but we can't continue to support parks in the way if parks doesn't have their own support. For the past 15 years, I've dedicated my life to cleaning up beaches, working on beach safety issues, supporting access issues from Brookings all the way to Astoria. I've captained beach cleanups with Solve as a regional captain for 5 years as a volunteer. For 7 years, I was the Oregon field manager, which meant I spent a lot of time on the ground on our beaches. Literally every week, I drove from Brookings to Astoria at least once. The problems that you saw in the photos, they're real. The deaths that occur are tragic. They're preventable. And we would like to see this effort with Senate Bill 745 start to address some of these issues and these shortfalls. And the last 3 years I transitioned from my field role, like really being on the ground, getting my fingernails dirty and rolling my sleeves up, to this policy position, which I've got the suit on and I'm getting there, but I'm not all the way there yet. I'm starting to learn how to translate the problems that we see in the field and on the ground into policy. And this is a big one for us, and we think that Senate Bill 745 is a real opportunity to address some real issues on the ground. We think that we've come up with some clever ways here to generate some revenue in a not friendly budget environment right now. So this isn't the year to be making general fund requests. We recognize that. And so to reiterate what Representative Gomberg said, we believe that tax dollars spent on the beach, particularly at state parks within a state agency in the 50th year anniversary of our beach bill, can stay on the beach and support these issues that we see. And I'm happy to take any questions. Thank you.
Good morning, Chairman Haas, members of the committee. My name is Bob Bailey. I'm here representing the Oregon Shores Conservation Coalition. This is a nonprofit organization. We've been around about 45 years, focused on the Oregon beaches. We have more than 900 members, and more importantly, we have over 1,000 coast watchers, each of whom has adopted a mile of the Oregon coast, and they walk it frequently and report back to us and to state parks and sometimes the state police on issues that they see out there on the beach. And it really comes out of that experience of having our coast watchers out on the beach all the time coming to us and saying, we need help on the beach. Oregon's beaches are well visited. They are beautiful, but they're also dangerous. Many people come from not just statewide, but around the country and around the world to visit. And as has been pointed out repeatedly, there are safety issues, there are marine debris issues, there are development issues along the backside of the beach, the vandalism and so on. So we see a variety of problems out there on the beach every day, and began talking with Charlie and Surfrider Foundation and the Coastal Caucus members, particularly Senator Roblin and Representative Gomberg, a year or so ago, about what we can do to give state parks more tools to work on the beach. And to Senator Boquist, to your concern about where does the money go and does it really get spent there? We have great relationships on the ground with state parks at the local level. So I would agree with Charlie and with Carmen that if things are not being done at the local level, then Parks is going to hear about it. But that's where the relationship starts and where the need is. Maybe some sort of advisory committee could be set up to involve people on the ground to advise parks and how to use these on a, say, a biennial basis. But we see this as a start in protecting over the long term Oregon's one of signature treasures, which is our Oregon beaches. Thank you very much.
Senator Buckley. Just very quickly, because I need to grasp for the record here. Again, I'm supporting the bill. The question comes back down. It says administration, personnel, and expenses. Everything I just heard from you, for the record, indicates to me you have volunteers, you already have people you're coordinating with parks, and what you need is additional funds to do problems like this right here. It doesn't look to me like your intent is for parks to go hire two employees to replace two of your volunteers.
Chair Haas, Senator Boquist, yes, I think we had intended these sort of emergency situations that did not have the funding for cleanup and relied heavily on volunteers was one of the issues that we were, you know, really trying to address. There's also a myriad of other issues that would fall under what we would call the ranger responsibilities, beach rangers, and which we only have four of on our coast. So for all 362 miles, there's four, if they're all employed at the same time. We put this together to augment that because we had seen success, particularly in Pacific City, with all the responsibilities of those rangers. So in Pacific City, I think Senator Roblin mentioned, they made a small investment for a seasonal ranger to be present, to be on site during this high volume tourism time of year. They cut their emergency calls by 70% to their local fire department. That was a very discreet, small amount of funding that was targeted at that right time. Now, when I took this, the blanket of issues to parks, and I said, how do we fix these issues? How do we make it whole? And Dennis Comfort and some of the other individuals that are regional park managers told me, well, they drafted a POP. And they said, $700,000, four FTEs, new trucks on the beach. And I said, that's not going to happen in this budget climate. You know, we're not going to go there. Let's start small and let's address the issues where we know they are, where we're seeing 700,000 people a year descending on Oswald West State Park. How can we deal $15,000-$20,000 there discreetly at the right season to make the big impact? And then also have the money there when things like these other issues wash ashore that we can't control.
Thank you.
We're out of time. Thank you for
thank you.
Well, thank you to the Surfrider organization for all of the cleanup. I'm not sure what we would do without you guys and to the Ocean Shores. And I apologize to others who signed up. I know we've had a couple hearings in a previous committee on this, and we will try and accommodate you next time. But clock on the wall dictates that we close this public hearing. So thank you for
thank you.
Public service.
Thank you.
Close the public hearing on Senate Bill 745. And we are out of time. Our agenda is clear. We will be back here for the joint committee tomorrow at 8:30. We are adjourned. 8:30. We are adjourned. Tomorrow at 8:30.